Welcome, everybody, to Unity of Whitby. It's a beautiful Sunday morning, and can you believe it? It's the last Sunday in July? I mean, that's incredible. And our picnic is next week after church, so please join us and bring something to pass. Oh, just this little thing. The theology of picnics, one more plug. Meeting as a community out of doors is an affirmation and celebration of Spirit and Creator of the world. It is fitting that the people of the Spirit of God gather cooperatively beneath the heavens to hear the proclamation of firmament. Surely the sky should join us in worship once a year. So please join us next week. Living in a violent and materialistic world through unity philosophy, we can live peacefully and purposefully in a world that often seems focused on violence, fear, and material success. It can be easy to feel overwhelmed or lose sight of what truly matters. Instead of allowing the outside world to determine our inner peace, Unity teaches that lasting peace begins within us. Its five basic principles provide practical guidance for living with hope, compassion, and purpose, even during difficult times. The fifth principle, knowing the truth is not enough, we must live it. Our beliefs become meaningful only when we put them into action. We can express unity principles by forgiving others, helping those in need, caring for the environment, treating people with respect, and choosing peace whenever possible. Every act of kindness creates a ripple effect that makes our community stronger. Unity philosophy teaches that while we cannot always control what happens in the world, we can choose how we respond. We can choose faith instead of fear, gratitude instead of scarcity, compassion instead of anger, service instead of selfishness. By living the five unity principles each day, we become examples of peace in a world that desperately needs it. And from Unity Weekly, inspiration created by Reverend Joanna, which we all use each week. She had posted this: love is the solution. Meditation is the solution. Forgiveness is the solution. A small act of kindness is the solution. Realizing our power is the solution. Taking deliberate action is the solution. You are the solution.
We have a few moments together. Let's take advantage of that. Let's get comfortable where you are. Settle in to your chair, feel the chair supporting you and the floor underneath the chair and the foundation underneath the floor and the ground under the foundation and the earth under the ground, the universe supporting it all. Whatever's going on for you right now, body, mind, and spirit, feel yourself settling on the next breath. Feel the roots of your being flowing down through your feet into the ground. traveling all the way to the core, to Mother Earth. She receives your roots, she receives your being, and sends her love right back. And in so doing, you're part of a giving and receiving love. Invites us to relax. Just be. That feels good, doesn't it? Breathing and allowing. Breathing and allowing the stillness and being reminded that it is available to us always with just the next breath. Just choosing it. Angels of peace, our worries release. And as we breathe and allow, you might be reminded of someone you love, someone you know, who could also use that deep breath, that connection to Mother Earth, that reminder that the angels of peace are here, that the worries can be released in that next breath. And if there's anyone that you'd like us to know about, to hold with you, a celebration, a concern, a challenge, let's start with our family on Zoom. Does anyone on Zoom have somebody they'd like us to hold with you? So, I don't know if any of you remember the daily word from last Sunday. This is not a test. I took a look at the daily word last Sunday, and for some reason, it really struck me. And it was about world peace. And it said, the Bible's sacred pairings, lions and lambs, swords and plowshares, reveal that peace becomes possible when I and others hold life's polarities in harmony. These verses remind me that wholeness arises not from opposition, but from integration. Within all people, strength and tenderness, boundaries and compassion, courage and vulnerability arise from the same divine source. Lion and lamb are not rivals. They are facets of one creation. Sword and plow are not contradictions. They are different tools for transformation. I thought that was a real powerful sentiment, don't you?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of focus on that this morning because I've been thinking about it all week. Because, you know, I try to come up here and talk about what it is that we can do to manage ourselves in this time. And as we are reminded that we are all individually a microcosm of the macrocosm, which is the circus that we're living in out there. Circus is a friendly word, I think. So that we know that what's going on in here has impact on that out there. And so what can we do? What do we need to understand? What can we do to help a shift, a transformation of what's going on out there? And so when I was thinking about these images, these two familiar biblical images, the lion and the lamb, the swords beaten into plowshares, I didn't even know what a plowshare was. Do you know what a plowshare is? I've always heard that, but it's, what is a plowshare? A plowshare is a blade. It's a blade for, you know, the old-fashioned kind of, what is that called? Is it the tilling that tills the soil?
Yes.
The blade, that sharp, sharp blade. And what the idea was is that the sword would be beaten into, become a blade to plow the grass, the dirt, rather than used for a weapon. It would be used for something positive. These are not just poetic images from long ago. I realize they are invitations to do a different way of living. The image of the lion and the lamb symbolizes peace, the harmony of opposites, and the dual nature of power. The lion represents strength, courage, authority, and majesty. The lamb represents gentleness, innocence, humility, and vulnerability. At first, these qualities may appear to be in conflict. We may imagine that we must choose between the strong or being tender, between setting boundaries or showing compassion, between being courageous or being vulnerable. But the deeper spiritual teaching is that these qualities are not enemies. They are facets of one creation. True strength is not force alone. It becomes whole when it is joined with gentleness. So think about that. Strength becomes whole when it is joined with gentleness. Boundaries become life-giving when they are guided by compassion. Courage becomes healing when it remains open to vulnerability. And then with the swords into the plowshares, it comes from a verse in Isaiah. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. A sword is an instrument of conflict. A plowshare is the hardened blade of a plow, the part that cuts into the soil and prepares the earth for new life. The prophecy does not say that the metal disappears. It says the metal is transformed. What once wounded can be reshaped into something that cultivates, nourishes, and serves. This is a powerful image for our own lives, isn't it? The same energy we use to defend, argue, control, or divide can be reshaped into energy that builds relationships, tends the soil of community, and makes room for new life. So I was thinking about this and how, you know, this seems like a pretty simple concept. Why is it such a mess? Why is it so difficult? What is the problem? I know I've asked this question before, and I'm still asking it. And so one of the things that I settled into, which seems like a big part of the problem, is this concept of diversity. Diversity, something that we've always known is a good and wonderful thing. Diversity, to have a variety of energies, of traditions, of possibilities that makes the experience richer and more life-filled and more life-giving. But recently, over the last decade or so, has become used to create division and separation and fear and doubt. And then I think back to the beginning of this country and how we were founded. And there's one concept of the high, high ideals that our founding fathers were thinking of when they created the concept of this country. And then there's also the aspect of what we did in order for the country to be discovered or conquered. What we did to the people who were already living here, the native folks who were pushed out of the way, whose lives were disrupted and whose lands were taken. It's a huge piece of our history. And there's a push these days to try to forget about that or to even say that that did not occur. And we know that it did occur. And what we need to understand as conscious beings, that it's important for us to know that it did occur. Because it's when we claim that it did occur is when we can move forward from it, that we can move on and create something new. That's when the swords are beaten into plowshares to create new life. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And because we aren't doing that, we're trying to pretend like it didn't happen, we continue to create the same thing, the same separation, the same marginalization of people. We go around in circles, and it gets deeper and deeper. And what we need to do is to claim the truth of who we are, and part of who we are is having made a lot of mistakes. But those mistakes can help lift us up to choose again, to become more as a result. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Diversity is the condition of being composed of differing elements, different forms, ideas, cultures, experiences, bodies, beliefs, and ways of seeing the world. Diversity itself is not the problem. The problem begins when difference becomes separation and separation becomes marginalization. And so we have kind of, I see it as two different things in the beginning. Well, three things. The high ideals of the founding fathers, the way we pushed and destroyed the world of the native people. And then there were the Africans that we stole and pushed them into servitude and slavery. And again, that's something else that's trying to be minimized at this point. And we cannot do that, because as long as we continue to do that, we will continue to put people into servitude and slavery. Is that not true?
Yes.
That's what we have to get, dear ones. That's what we have to get. And so looking at, okay, so how do we do that? How do we do that? How does that work? What can we do? What can you and I do? And I was reminded of, over the years, I have worked with a lot of couples in couples coaching or couples counseling or couples that are having problems communicating and stuff like that. I know none of you have ever been in situations like that, but a lot of people have. And so what I have found over and over again, almost always, is that when couples are at odds with one another, I would see how each person would hold tightly to their view. This is me, this is what I believe. And then the other person is, this is what they believe. And they're holding really tightly to it. And at first it would feel like, you know, well, one's right and one's wrong. And that's what brought them to the chairs in front of me, was, well, I'm right and they're wrong. And they just got to get it. That's the problem. That's what's the problem. They got to get it. But what we would discover as the conversation deepened was that what one person was thinking, that's what they were thinking based on their own experience, based on their own history, the filters that they have of the world based on where they've walked. And of course, that's always different for each of us because each of us has had a totally different experience from anybody else. And so when they would look at each other and begin to think in terms of, okay, this is how I see it, that's how you see it. It isn't a right or wrong, it's two different views. And by looking at those two different views, what can we learn? How can we grow as a result of those two opinions, those two opposing views? And what I found invariably is that when a couple was willing to do that exercise, there would be a third solution that would come to the surface. It might be something totally different from either one of what they were holding. But what it did is it opened the door to the possibility. So that rather than getting stuck in, it's my way or no way, and the other person is saying the same thing, it's stopping and taking a look at what you're both holding. And instead of looking at it as opposition, looking at it as two possibilities, two potentials. What can we learn from both of them? And I think to myself, that exercise is a really good idea in general, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Rather than they're wrong, obviously people, a lot of cultures have been on the planet a whole lot longer than we have. And their traditions have been around a whole lot longer than ours. And they deeply believe in what they believe, just like we believe in what we believe. And what if we were to sit down and look at that and say, what can we learn from this? What could possibly come forth from these two traditions, from these two beliefs that we can create that would take us forward? Wouldn't that be an interesting conversation? Wouldn't it be more fruitful than this is mine and too bad? The third solution, the third possibility, is a most practical path to peace. It's how we can come by peace. Peace in a relationship, peace in a country, in a world. It does not erase difference. It listens for what the difference is trying to teach. It asks what larger wholeness is trying to emerge here. Now, you know, you have your conflicts in your family, with your neighbors, your coworkers, the kids, the grandkids, the parents. What if you were to think in these terms? What larger wholeness is trying to emerge here? Because, dear ones, the way that we will impact the whole is by healing what's right here. Do you see? That's how we do our work to make a difference in the world. You know, I spend a lot of time working with Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the Conversations with God books, so you often hear me quote from them. And in book three, there's a teaching that speaks directly to this idea and speaks to the movement from separation to unity. God says, heal the rift between you and the illusion of separation, and you shall be delivered back to the source of your inner strength. And it says, power comes from inner strength, Inner strength does not come from raw power. In this, much of the world has it backwards. We often mistake domination for strength, separation for safety, and control for peace. But real power is not power over. Real power is power with. It is the strength that comes from remembering that we are not separate from God, we are not separate from one another, and not separate from the life of the world. And we cannot build walls high enough, never would, because they're not meant to be. It will never work. It never has worked. It won't. Because our natural existence is oneness. So if peace begins with a human heart, then the path to peace is also a practice. We can begin by noticing where we have hardened, where we have divided the world into enemies and allies, where we have insisted that only one side of a polarity can be true. Now, I know none of you are doing that. Oh, I have my moments. Then we can ask ourselves, where does my strength need tenderness? Where does my strength need tenderness? Where do my boundaries need compassion? Where does my courage need vulnerability? Remember, vulnerability is not a weakness. Vulnerability is remembering that there's nothing to fear. Because we are all one. Where might a conflict in my life be inviting a third way? That solution that will come up between the middle, in the middle, between the conflict energy. What sword in me is ready to become a plowshare? That's worth thinking about, isn't it? These images, the plowshare and the sword, the lion and the lamb, they invite us to move from conflict to communion. They teach that peace is not the absence of difference, but the healing alignment of difference with a greater divine order. The lion and the lamb are not rivals. The sword and the plowshare are not contradictions. Both point towards a vision of life in which seeming opposites become partners in service of wholeness. Perhaps that is the path to peace, not choosing one side of life's polarities, but allowing them to work together, not power over, but power with, not separation, but unity. Not the sword raised against another, but the sword transformed into a tool that prepares the ground for new life. And so, kind of in closing, I would leave an example of this. I know, and I know you know what I mean, that it's very easy to look at some people and go, how can you think that? How do you believe that? How can you support that? What's wrong with you? I know you've never thought anything like that, but I have. What's wrong with you? And it really isn't about that that you're so desperately holding on to. It's about what's going on with you that has you looking at that and going, yeah. Right? So, that polarity is so strong, that division is so hard. How can we find commonality? How can we, where do we find it? And so what I've come to understand is one way we find it, and it's why I've become involved in it, is you may be aware, maybe some of you are involved in it, is South Whidbey Prepares. South Whidbey Prepares, or some version of that, What does that mean? It means the community that's coming together to prepare for whatever might come down the path. Like, you know, what is it we're sitting on? Four faults. And so we could have an earthquake, or we could have a flood, not so much a flood, but a tsunami. We could have terrible storms. You know, the climate is doing its thing, and there's a lot that could happen. Fire, lots of fire going on, that kind of thing. Because what happens is people that have very different political views, they all live in the same neighborhood. They all have the same concerns about clean water, clean air, being able to protect their families. It's all the same. There's no politics in that. There's no economic divisions in that. We come together at the same table, neighbor to neighbor. If something happens, what are you going to need? What can I do to help? You know that when there's an emergency or a car wreck or somebody, nobody stops and waits to find out, what are these people, who did they vote for? No. You run immediately to see, what can I do? Get the person out of the danger, right? Because that's who we are. That's who we ultimately are. There's no separation. We will do whatever it takes in that moment, right? And so there are things in our world right now that we can do that bridges that polarity, that division, that divisiveness that says, I don't understand you. But when it comes to, do you have a go bag? We can share that. That's just one example. There are many. There are many. It's worth it to look for them. We can find a way through, because that's ultimately how we're going to heal this, dear ones. That's how we're going to do it. And I know we are going to do it. And I keep coming back here so you can call me on it. And don't you look forward to the day when we feel and know that we are doing it.
Yes.
Blessings, everyone. Much love.